Welcome to Three the Hard Way Hanoi.
Yo.
And today we have a very, very special guest and a fantastic interview. I'm very excited about this. Please say hello to Ekin Andrews, everybody.
How do everyone?
How's it going?
All right. So, yeah, so obviously maybe some people listening or watching don't know what we're going to be talking about or who you are. Can you just kind of, you know, introduce yourself about how long you were in Hanoi and that kind of thing?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, so I was in Hanoi for about 8 years. I moved there when I was 19 years old. I did the usual thing, went backpacking and got to Hanoi and just stayed like a lot of people do. Yeah.
Like me as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a few different things there. Ran some bars, some motorbike shops, did some teaching for a while. And then, unfortunately, I ended up in prison for 17 months. We were through, completely all my fault. You know, it wasn't like an accident or anything like that. It was just a complete fuck up on my part. So,
well, at least you know you can admit that, right? You know, we all make mistakes, you know.
Oh, yeah, too, right? Yeah, yeah.
Especially when you're young.
Yeah, you're younger.
Oh yeah, it's better to get the mistakes than when you're younger, and then you've learned by the time you're older.
true, definitely. Yeah. So people listening, Ekin spent 17 months in a Vietnamese prison, and for selling drugs, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And yeah, what were you caught with? What did they? So
I was caught with 5 grams of weed. 3 pills, 3 ecstasy pills, and some meth and a tab of acid. Yeah, I think that was it. Yeah.
Yeah. So not
a huge amount, but
yeah,
enough to show that I was dealing. Yeah.
Oh, well, definitely. And the penalties on paper here are pretty steep
for a lot. Oh, yeah. 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 Well, I was looking, but just from having that, I was looking at a 7 to 15 year sentence off the bat. So,
exactly. Yeah. All right. So let's get into how this all happened. You know, people, you know, watching, listening, we lived together and this all happened while we were living together. We lived together it's a 4-bedroom house. So we always had a bunch of roommates. It was a party house.
It
definitely was a party house. There was always people there drinking and having a good time. So we lived together. So kind of let's go into the story about what exactly happened.
So I accidentally started selling drugs. It wasn't like I was going out peddling on the streets or anything. I wouldn't always carry it on me and push it towards people. I just knew a guy that I knew from my old bar that would be able to get it fairly cheap and at decent quality. So if I had any friends that wanted anything, I would hook them up. So I'd been doing this for a while, not on a huge scale, maybe once or twice a week, somebody would need something and I would sort them out. And then I think it was Christmas Eve, was it, Paul? Or was it the day before Christmas Eve?
It was Christmas Eve. You got arrested.
It was Christmas Eve,
some present.
Yeah, it was Christmas Eve. And my mother was meant to be coming on Christmas Day. So
yes.
I said to my friend, I said, if you need anything, I'm going to be going away for a few weeks. So just, you know, just let me know. I'll sort you out. So he said, yeah, I'll just maybe some of this and this and this. Okay. So I went to go and pick it up. And then when I was driving from the old quarter up to Westlake, I kind of had a strange feeling. I'd stopped my bike and I'd never usually feel like this. I had my headphones in, but I had this feeling I was being followed or watched, or I thought I was just being paranoid. I stopped my bike, was looking around, there was no one there, no one obviously like stopped or was waiting. So I continued on. And I turned up into an alleyway. And there somebody was trying to turn their motorbike around. So I just stopped my bike, waiting to let them turn around and get out of the way. And before I know it, I was surrounded by, you know, armed police, and they dragged me and got my arms around behind my back and were shouting things at me. And I was like, oh fuck. Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously. I'm fucked. The first thing that came to my mind was I'm fucked. Yeah. And they had a translator with them. They said, oh, this is just a routine check.
Wow. And they had a translator with them.
I've lived in Vietnam for years. And, this is not a routine check. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, what, yeah. So then that's, yeah, they got you. And then we later know and found out that they've been following you and watching our house and surveilling us. Also, you know what's funny is that now I remember a story you told me before this happened. Do you remember maybe a week or 2 weeks before this? You told me you were actually got chased by police and you got away.
Yeah.
And you got
I forgot about this.
Remember? So I'm thinking in my head that maybe even at that time they were trying to get you at that point as well. Remember that story?
I remember being chased by police. I completely forgotten about that.
And when you told me that, when you said that to him, like, that's the weirdest thing. The police never bother any foreigners, let alone chase them. So that I remember.
And they did. The police did tell me. They did tell me that they tried to catch me before, but I was too quick. And that would be it.
So that's
forgotten about that.
Because I remember.
I thought they just tried to catch me and I'd been oblivious to it. But, you know, I remember this now.
I remember you came home that night. We're chilling in the living room. You're like, police just fucking chased me. I fucking got away, though. I'm like, damn, why are they chasing? They never chase foreigners. I'm like, that's fucking weird.
Yeah, shit. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that, man. Yeah.
Putting the pieces together now.
You can still, when things keep going, especially when we're talking and I tell them a story that he totally forgot. The reasons why you were being surveillance, it's not because you were selling a little bit of stuff, right? It's because you were selling it for somebody who is being served.
They were following a guy called Mac, who they had cameras on his house. They suspected him of being a dealer. And obviously they saw me coming and going. So they thought, oh shit, we need to follow this guy. So that's when they started following me and checking out the house and so on. So
So there's something. Maybe I'm happy that we're redoing this because there's something let's talk about something. So when I'm thinking about the timeline of when our house started getting watched and all this started happening, we're going to talk about somebody, I'm not going to name his name. Somebody else lived in the house before who was also friends with that man and doing stuff for him as well. Went to go pick up a package in Da Nang with police waiting for him there, and then was deported with no jail time or no nothing.
And he got away with that.
Around
on a technicality, I think. Yeah.
And the thing is, I'm not saying anything about him. Actually, I love him to death. He was a great dude. But after that is when, around that time is when they started watching him and started watching
us.
And
I think he was pretty naive, and there was like, oh, it'll be fine. There's no way that they'll follow through on this. But actually, that happening, they must have put the police onto him.
Must have put on.
And obviously, they're not just going to go in straight away and go, right, this is like, they're going to take their time and build up a case and watch, basically. So.
And that's exactly
it wouldn't surprise me if it was from then that they started watching him, because they did say that they've been watching me and him for months and months and months.
They were watching our house for months. They probably see me come out of my underwear a few times. but anyways that's kind of what kind of inspired you, kind of got yourself in a situation, right? And also because too is also a reason I know is too is because you're also doing this to pay off some debts, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Because I remember you owed me quite a bit of money at the time for rent and all that stuff. And he came and gave me money. Remember that?
Yeah.
For that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah.
So it was
a pretty shitty time of my life.
You owed him money. So it was also a reason for you to kind of just pay your debt off.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It seemed like an easy way to get it sorted, you know.
Of course, right? Like, you know, and us living here.
It always seems like an easy way to get it sorted. And then, yeah, obviously it's like,
No, but you know what though? Like, here we have that illusion that, like, the fact that we can drive around, the police really don't bother us. That you think that it doesn't never going to happen to anybody, but it does.
Well, it's pretty unheard of, isn't it? Of any foreigner really getting arrested over there. It does happen, but very rarely, you know. So you do get yourself into like this false sense of security where it's just like, oh, I can just do whatever and it'll be fine. And sure enough, it's not, you know. Okay, I did get away with doing a lot of daft things over there for a lot of years, but, you know, eventually something was going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Well, just again, I think, you know, wrong place, wrong time, and But anyways, so let's get back into the timeline of the story. So you've just been arrested, and you're like,
oh, for the routine police check. What happened then? They arrested me, so they put me on a motorbike, sandwiched between two police officers on a motorbike, and took me to the nearest police station to search me, which is pretty strange.
So they didn't search you on site?
No, they didn't search me on site. No, no. They waited until we were in a police station because they had to have a witness that wasn't a member of the police. So it was like somebody, but I didn't have a clue who he was, and I didn't think he was affiliated with the police or anything. He had to watch them search me. So I couldn't turn around and say that was planted. I think that must have been the reason.
Honestly, that must only be for foreigners, for embassy.
I'm guessing so, yeah.
Right? See them doing that for every Vietnamese person they got to search or anything, right?
No, I doubt it.
So there was a witness that wasn't a police officer that had to watch you making sure. That's kind of all right. Like,
yeah, it was all right. Yeah.
That's a good policy.
They didn't try anything stupid. Like, they didn't try beating me. They didn't try any of that sort of stuff. They were just like, you know, they were pretty fair with me. You know, I was all quite clearly shitting myself. I was like,
what's gonna
happen? I tried to go into my pocket and be like, look, it's here. You caught me. And they were just like, no, they were sort of shouting at me because they thought I was, I don't know, obviously they thought I might pull something out or not. And I was just like, right, okay, yeah. And I was just like trying, I was just like, it's in there. Still took them ages to find it. It was in my jacket, inside breast of my jacket pocket. I was pointing to where it was, and they thought it was stitched into my jacket. So they were coming out with knives and stuff, trying to pick away at the stitching. I was just like, mate, it's just like, it's an inside pocket, man.
Yeah.
Please don't ruin this jacket.
Yeah, yeah.
You're worried.
Pretty daft, you know, literally pointing to where it is, and they still can't find it, but yeah. So they found it. And then what happened? I'm trying to remember now. So then they take me to the main police station after they found it. They seal all the drugs up into plastic bags and then sign where there's like a seal so they can't open it up without the seal breaking. Take me to the main police station where I'm sat there for what feels like days, but it can't have been that long. I suppose we can go into the story about when they take me to the house. So they, I think it was there overnight, and it was Christmas Day. It must have been Christmas Day.
I think they
said, right, okay, come on, we need to go to your house. So I get into the truck, and I'd had no sleep, just absolutely knackered. And we drive over to the house in Long Bien. We get there and there's loads of police officers outside the gate. And the dog's inside the house just barking at them. And all these police officers are just scared of the dog, like terrified of these two dogs that are barking at them. But obviously, the dogs, like, they were quite racist towards Vietnamese people.
Yeah, they're both
The dogs just hated any
Suma
Vietnamese
does
people.
not like Vietnamese people, no.
Yeah. So I open the gate. I'm in handcuffs. I'm opening up the gate. I go in. And Greg sat there. Greg sat down towards where the dog's barking.
Well,
And Greg's just like,
Greg was waiting for
no,
that. Greg
please.
was waiting for that. Oh yeah, I can go into my story about how the fact that Greg was sitting there and everybody else was gone and there was nothing in your room. But so I'm just hanging out in my room and I get a call from the landlord saying, "Listen, Paul, Ekin has been arrested for selling drugs. He's coming to the house with the police right now. If just make sure it's nice and clean for the police. They're gonna search." I'm just gonna say it like that, right?
Scrub the house.
You know, yeah,
Make
you
sure
know.
off the floor.
So I was
Yes.
like, "Oh
Yeah,
fuck!" And I'm like, "Okay." So I got out of my bed and I just opened my door and I walked out into the hallway and I just yelled, "Yo, Ekin has been arrested. The police are coming here in about 10 minutes. If you got anything or anything in this house, get your shit and get the fuck out now." And honestly, we ran that 5 minute drill like we practiced that, like a fire drill. Literally, honestly, for me, like I didn't have to worry about that. I didn't have anything to worry about, but everybody was like fucking 5 minutes, boom, 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 and gone. And Greg knew about it, so Greg was like, "I'm waiting. I want to see this. I want to see it." I was like, "No, fuck this. I'm going to work. I'm
We
not
can get
this."
as far away from there as possible.
Yeah, exactly.
So
But
he's, he just stayed there, like.
yeah. Well, he just stayed wait to watch them come in, and he sent me a message when it was happening. And what happened? They brought you with like eight police officers, right?
There's a lot of police officers there just for a search. And so they went in and they just wanted to search my room. And they were asking me if there was anything in there. And I was like, well, maybe, but I'm not sure. This is what I told them. Maybe, but I'm not sure that it could be. And I pointed to the box where there would be stuff if there was going to be anything. And they opened it and there was literally nothing in there.
Yeah.
They were surprised. I was really fucking surprised. I was like, what? It's like, where did everything go? Oh, excellent, but yeah. They could see the surprise on my face and they were like, what? They could tell something had happened. But there was just like nothing there. And
And that's why.
and some great friends right there. Really sorted me out there. Because just like anything, even, just any paraphernalia, anything can also just be used and that could bump up my
Well,
sentence
bump
and
up your sentence. Yeah,
suddenly
anything
make it more
more could
difficult.
have been, yeah, exactly. Could have added a couple more years.
So I was really fortunate to have friends that are just like, right, okay, this is what we need to do.
Yeah, well, and I do want to go back to the fact that, like, the way that they were trying to get you, and it looks like they've been trying to get you for a little while before they got you. Remember a couple of days before that, they came for a routine fucking visa check in her house. They kept trying to like come for like this visa check where it's like, they came with like four or five police officers, like even some in like just normal clothes and shit. I'm like, this is, I've been here for
That's
almost
not
8 years. This
routine. They keep on using routine,
is
but
like,
I've never seen
I've
that
never seen looking
shit.
for that. And that's one of them. They were trying looking for you. Niggas were asking, "Where's him?" And I went upstairs, and you're like, "Tell them I'm at home." And I just like, "Oh," and then they
I'm
fucking
not
left.
able. Curtains closed, door locked,
Anyways, yeah. So let's get back into it. They bring you to the house, search, nothing happens. Then what? I guess they take you back.
They take me back take me back to the main police station. And it must be later on that night. They're like getting me ready to go. And I'm not sure what's going on. I'm like, oh, sweet. Maybe they're going to just like release me because there was no drugs and, you know, they didn't find anything at the house. So I think it's okay. Maybe they're going to release me and, you know. So, yeah, getting all ready to go. I'm like getting a bit more like, oh, okay, great. This is over. It was far from fucking over. It was far from over. So I was like, you know, got my stuff and getting ready to go out. And they're just like, right, okay, we're taking you to a detention center now. I was just like, what? Yeah. That was when it really set in. I was like, yeah, okay. I'm going to prison for a while, but it will be okay, I'm thinking, because the embassy will get me out. Surely that, you know, this is just, you know.
Was anybody in contact with you at that time? Was anybody telling you anything about, like,
no,
what?
No, absolutely nothing. They were just trying to keep me completely in the dark. No. I had no contact with the embassy until I was in, like, a few months after, like, into
being
in jail. Yeah.
Wow.
So I was just completely kept in the dark for ages. I think it was like 3 months into it when I finally heard something from the outside. It was like really strange. Yeah. That was difficult. 3 months of just not knowing. Although everyone in there said, look, you're in here for a minimum of this amount of time. You know, like, you know, 10 months until you move on to a bigger prison. And
well, because I remember what we were hearing out, like, while this was happening and stuff, was that, like, you could get, like, 7 to, like, 14 years or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. That was my original thing that the police wanted me to get. They suggested I got 7 to 15 years sentence. So when I was in there, everyone was telling me, it's okay, you'll get 10 years. Most likely you'll get 10 years, but you'll be out in 7. So it's not too bad. And I was like, well, after a while, it's like, oh, okay, that's not too bad. 7 years' time, you know, I won't be too old when I get out. And I kind of got to grips with that. Yeah. I was like, yeah, okay, I can do that. That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't, well, there's nothing, you can't not accept it, really. You've got no choice. So it's like, yeah, okay. Mentally preparing yourself for it, it's just like, right, that's fine. That's fuck all. Like, I can do 7 years. That's not long. And actually, it is a long time, but you kind of got to prepare yourself mentally for that sort of thing.
At this time, is that where you were staying next to death row?
Yeah, that was when I was next to death row. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I spent a long time next to death row.
You're going to tell that one crazy story later.
But we won't
go into that now, but.
Next to death row
is crazy. All these people were chained to the wall and stuff, right?
Yeah, chained to the wall for years and years and years. I think it was a minimum of 5 years that they'd be chained to the wall. Two people to one small cell, never allowed off for exercise. Oh, you know.
So you're never unchained?
Like, never unchained. And they can't use the toilet, they can't shower or anything. They just get a bucket for going to the toilet in, and another bucket with water in every morning so they can wash.
That's crazy.
And there's one guy, he was there for 7 years, chained to the fucking wall. And bear in mind, none of these people were in for murder. They're all in for drugs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's crazy. Yeah. So you're saying none of those people were in there for murder?
None of those people were in for murder. No, they were all on death row for drugs.
I guess,
okay, large quantities of different drugs,
what kind of drugs do you think? Like meth and that kind of
meth,
stuff?
Meth, heroin, all the different drugs. Maybe not weed. I think it's difficult to get the death sentence for weed. But, yeah. But all of them seem like genuinely nice people, and that could also be something to do with, you know, the more time you sat there for years and years in a cell, you're going to become a little bit chilled, or, you know.
Did you have a chance to actually talk to them and chat with them?
Yeah. So I could see into three of the cells from my cell. So I would chat with them every day. They would sing songs. I would teach them English. They would teach me some Vietnamese. We would share food with each other. So whenever they had some like nice food or cigarettes or tobacco, they would share with me. And I would, share whenever I had something back with them.
Sure, yeah.
So I got on really well with them. And they were all really, really nice and really, supportive and just like, ah, it's okay. In reality, like if I was out in 7 years, it doesn't really matter. They've been chained to the wall there for 5 years and they're going to be killed. So I was just like, ah, actually, yeah.
Well,
Doesn't
yeah,
really matter what
then,
happens
yeah,
here. At least I'm not in their situation.
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so again, you're kind of stuck in this one place that you don't get to do much but stay in the cell. You're not given any like what pencils or paper. You're not.
No pen and paper, no nothing to read, no outside time. Just, yeah, you just stay in your room.
And you still don't know anything that what's actually going on. Like you haven't really been contacted by anybody yet, or.
Not really. I mean, my embassy came to see me after about 3 months of me being there. But they weren't able to give me much information just because they haven't really dealt with it before. They didn't really know what the system was meant to be like. And then also, COVID started to happen and it made it difficult for them to then come and visit me and give me more information when they had it.
Yeah, well, that's a funny thing. Like, I remember we talked about this before, but COVID, they didn't really tell you much what was actually going on, right?
Yeah, what did they
No,
say?
not really. No. I remember when they started to go around the prison, they were spraying the place and everyone started wearing masks. And I asked one of the police officers, I was just like, why is everyone wearing the mask and why are they spraying? And he just started laughing and just pointing towards the room where there was a lot of Chinese prisoners. He just went, China, China, very sick, China, very sick. And we were just like, well, right, okay. We just thought somebody had like had an infectious like disease or something in one of the Chinese inmates. But yeah, no idea.
When did you actually know what COVID was?
Well, I managed to get a few newspapers like from the guys on death row, and kind of starting to, my Vietnamese was okay. Reading Vietnamese, I wasn't great.
Yeah.
But I could kind of like get the gist of things, so I started to read these Vietnamese newspapers and had like the death counts and so on. I was like, oh shit, something really is
Something's yeah.
going on. Like, yeah. So that's when I first kind of knew about it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the embassy were able to get a visit with me and a phone call. So they were able to explain more to me about COVID and why people can come and visit me. Yeah, that sort of thing.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, so another thing I guess we didn't really talk about too much is your mother was coming to visit you,
Yeah.
arriving the day before you got, the day after you got
Day
arrested,
after, yeah.
which was, that was obviously a terrible thing to have to deal with. But they wouldn't even let her see you or nothing like that as well.
No, I mean, no, they wouldn't let my mother see me. They wouldn't let anybody see me.
Well,
I was
you
quite
know, because
surprised, but
you
my dad was able to come across, and somehow my embassy managed to get him into the prison to see me. And this is unheard of. All the other inmates in there said, until you go to court, you can't see anyone apart from your embassy and your lawyers. So when I get called out of my cell, they say, oh, embassy. I went to go and see the embassy, and my dad was sat there. It was a shock. It was amazing. I was just like, what the fuck? It's my dad. But yeah. Which is really a really nice surprise. Yeah.
that's it. Yeah, and I remember I met your father because he came by the house as well to pick up some of your stuff,
Yeah.
and stuff like that. And I also met your mother the day she got there, which was just a terrible time to meet
Yeah.
somebody, but she was just distraught.
Yeah.
And and Chris, our friend, having to go and do that at the airport,
Oh man,
I
yeah, that's a really horrible thing
was
to have
like,
to do.
I'll do it. I'm like, all right,
Yeah.
cool. Okay, fine. You want to do that? Go ahead. Because
Yeah.
I have to come and wait there and pick her up and see, like, Ekin's not here and have to explain the whole thing. And
Oh man, it must have been horrible. Horrible for Chris to have to do that. And obviously, it was really horrible for my mother because I
Oh,
hadn't
of
seen her in
course.
years.
No, of
And,
course. Yeah, I know.
she came out to see me and I'd been arrested. I still feel really guilty about that. I did at the time and I was like,
Well, yeah, you
yeah,
know.
still
Obviously.
is in my mind about how horrible that must have been for her.
Yeah. You know, what can you do? That's things happen. You know, you make mistakes and it affects more than just you, right? But what can you do? At the end of the day, you know, can laugh about it now, maybe. Ha
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
ha
she
ha.
does. Now she sees the funny side of it. She does take the piss out of me for
Yeah.
it
That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyways, I just kind of wanted to get into that. So, yeah. So again, you're just kind of waiting to hear what's going on. The embassy's seeing you. What's next?
Yeah.
Like, what's going on?
So it took me, after about 9 months of waiting, I finally went to court. So I got my court date a few months before I went to court. And so I knew the date that I was going. So that morning, I had to leave quite early. I think it was it in the morning? Sorry, it was in the afternoon my court date was. So couldn't sleep the night before, obviously really nervous. I just couldn't sleep at all. Next day, bags under my eyes, really tired, really nervous, also quite excited to actually get out of my cell, out of the prison, to go outside, even though I'll be in a prison van. It's like weirdly exciting just to be able to go somewhere different. And yeah, so I'm in this prison truck, and these like little like tiny windows like that. I'm looking outside, I can see like, but I can smell like food and like, it's just like, I was just like, yes, this is amazing. Great. Going on a little day trip, It's we get to court and Mac, the drug dealer who got arrested with me, he's there. So they sit us down next to each other in our handcuffs in this big courtroom.
Yeah, because again, if
We're sat there with,
this was almost like a sting operation. When you got busted, he got busted, right?
So he comes in a different truck, but we're both sat there in court together. We're sat there, just having a bit of a crack on. We're good friends,
Yeah,
just
exactly.
good to see him. We hadn't seen him in months, so it's just like we just sat there. And then this guy walks in with big gold chains around his neck, cigarette hanging out of his mouth. He just walks in. He walks up and he introduces himself to Mac. And this guy's the judge. He looks super mafia, man. Like, just gold rings, big gold chains, he's smoking Basso cigarettes. And he's just like, yeah. And he offers us a cigarette and we're sat in there in the courtroom, just, sat there smoking away. He tells the police to take the handcuffs off. And it turns out he introduced himself to Mac. He was like an old friend of the family. He was saying to Mac, "Oh, I remember you when you were just a young boy, and what are you doing here? And, okay, don't you worry, I'll see what I can do. Have a cigarette, relax, don't worry." Basically how it went. And he just like swaggers up to the judge's pulpit, I suppose it would be. Puts on his robes just over the top, and he just looks so funny there with his judge robes on and just bling and like, smoking a cigarette there in court. Yeah. It was strange, man. So my case gets argued. I've got two lawyers. And one of the arguments is that the weed that I was caught with shouldn't be used against me because in my country it's legal to smoke weed. And the judge was like, "Oh, okay, yeah, okay." It's utter bullshit. It's not legal to smoke weed in my country. But the lawyer's just talking nonsense to them, and the judge is going, "All right, oh, okay, okay." So after a bit of talking, and I have to stand up sometimes and just agree to whatever nonsense they're talking about, and just be like, they take a break, and the judge and the, I don't know, two other people in judge robes next to him. They go away into the back and discuss, and then they come back in and they give me my sentence. So comes in, and I stand up, and he says, "I'm giving you a 2-year sentence." I was over the moon. I thought I was going to get 10 years, so I got 2-year sentence.
Yeah, you're being told before that you're going to get 10 years or 15 or seven.
2 years. I've got myself mentally prepared for a 10-year sentence, and I get a 2-year sentence. I'm like, oh, fucking hell, that is so easy, not a problem, you know.
Well,
I'm already halfway through by the time I went to court. I was like, yeah, great, happy days.
Yeah, well, exactly, right? You get, you know, whatever time you've already served as well, right?
Yeah. So Mac, the Vietnamese guy, he got an 18-year sentence.
Yeah.
He got caught with a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff. But he was also told that he would get, minimum he would get was 20 years. He would not be able to get it lower than 20 years, so it was still kind of a good result for him. Well, he knew it was going to be high. He knew there's nothing he could do about it. But so after all that was done, Mac's wife was there. We sit there, and she brings in chocolate cake, and we have like a little like meal. We have some chocolate cake. We have some fruit. She pays off the police, so we can sit in the courtroom and just for like 10, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And just have some nice food and just chat and And then after that, the police took us back to the prison, where I had to wait another few months to go to the main prison. That was
So you've been sentenced, all that. I have another question, just because this is a question that's probably on a lot of people's minds. They're watching this. When it comes to the stigma of being in prison, was there any kind of rape or homosexuality or anything?
No, there was some homosexuality going on. In the main prison where I moved to, I'd heard a lot of stories about other people that had been in there, but there was one guy who was in there. He was in there for being a pedophile.
Okay.
And he was paying the younger Laotian prisoners, because they're super poor, he was paying them, or at least promising to pay them quite a lot so he could just do whatever. I heard lots of different stories about what they got up to, but the main story was that he would do that and he wouldn't pay them. I just kept my distance from him. Yeah. I thought he was a scumbag. He's a pedophile. I don't want to have anything.
Do you know where was he from? He was a foreigner, I guess.
Romania. Was he Romania? Yeah, Romania.
But anyways,
so
again, there was no people trying to rape you or rape people. There was maybe a little
pedophilia
going on.
I was really worried when I first went to prison, because I've heard all of these stories. I've heard, you know, shit, there's going to be violence. There's going to be people stabbing each other. There's going to be people trying to fuck each other. And I never found any of that in Vietnamese prison. I'm not saying it doesn't happen anywhere else, but very rarely was there any violence. I mean, everyone in the main prison that I went to, everyone had knives. They were using it for chopping things, trying to cook a little bit, and everyone had knives. No one was stabbing each other. There were no drugs about. Oh, like prison knives, like homemade prison knives, like shanks, but shanking each other. It was like, you know, for cutting up vegetables, So the fact that so many people can have knives in a prison and no one's getting stabbed is just to show what the mindset that people are in there. You can get in so much trouble for any act of violence, or, you know, you just can get in so much trouble and get so many more years put onto your sentence so easily.
Yeah.
Then no one even thinks about it. It's like, nah, fuck that. Get your head down, you know.
Yeah, do your time.
Get the time done and get out of there. That's what everyone's thinking. Yeah.
All right, brother. We're going to take a bit break. This will be the first part of the episode. This is Three the Hard Way, guys. The second part will probably be released at the same time. So go ahead and watch the second part, but we'll take a break. Here's some original music for you guys. Thank you so much, Ekin. We'll be back in a little bit.
No problem, Paul. Good to speak to you, man.
Yeah.
Okay. Peace.
All right. Peace.
No doubt. Just be the hard way.